Welcome to Establish the Edge. I'm your host, Mike Leone, here with special guest Anthony Amico to talk about five breakout wide receivers you should be targeting in your drafts this season. We've got Gabriel Davis, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Rashad Bateman, and you can find out who the top breakout wide receiver is if you continue to listen to this podcast. We're going to go through why each of these players are breakout wide receivers and, you know, where you should target them in your draft. So, Amico, thanks so much for joining me.
What's up, Mike? Yeah, I'm pumped to be here. It's only been a couple weeks, I think, since I've been on the show, so we're making this a thing, which I love.
I do. I love it. I particularly love talking wide receivers with you, the best position, as we noted to each other in Slack when we were setting up this podcast. And I'm going to pull up your Substack, amixta.substack.com, where you wrote about these five breakout wide receivers. And we're pretty much in line on all of these guys. People can see right away. Number five is Gabriel Davis, who I'm pretty psyched about as a Bills fan and in fantasy. He's been somewhat polarizing on Twitter because I think whenever you have a player where people are drafting, I don't want to say like on hype, because I think there's obviously a solid foundation here, but these guys that don't necessarily have the pass production to back up where they're drafting, you know, some people just lose their minds and don't understand how you could, you know, draft projecting so much change. So why are we projecting, you know, Gabriel Davis to be so much better than last season?
I mean, for starters, it's just like the nut spot, right? Like, I mean, you put out all this pass rate over expectation stuff. I think all that information is really valuable. And the Bills are always towards the top. I know that they're going to have a slight coaching change with Daboll in New York, but, you know, Ken Dorsey was under Daboll the whole time he was there. So I'm expecting like relative continuity. I know like we've talked about maybe they do a little more two tight end, whatever. But I would still expect them to lean pass heavy. So obviously it's a great spot. They lose two veteran players, you know, Manny Sanders, Cole Beasley, who took a lot of targets and a lot of snaps from Gabe, like early in the season. And then we have this playoff game where Gabe was just like an unreal monster. Like, you could pretty easily argue it's like the best playoff game for a wide receiver ever. And, you know, I don't like to go too much off of like sample size one, but it's like, there's a certain level of greatness. Like if you can do it in a game, like you feel like it's repeatable over the course of a season.
Yeah. And he was underrated as a prospect too. Someone, you know, we like that he worked his way on the field right away too, as, you know, a rookie that didn't necessarily have a lot of draft capital. And, you know, some of these things, some of our confirmation bias, I guess, is getting confirmed with things we're seeing with Gabriel Davis. For me too, I mean, you lose Manny Sanders and Cole Beasley, and particularly Manny, they don't replace Manny Sanders. You know, they replace Cole Beasley in the slot with Jamison Crowder, you know, whether it's going to be Crowder, Isaiah McKenzie. They don't have someone to play outside behind Gabriel Davis right now. They're actually like really bad in depth in terms of outside wide receivers. So he almost has to play. And they really dictated too down the stretch last year that he was the guy that they were leaning on. Like the crazy stats aside from that Kansas City game, the game before New England, I know I remember from DFS going into the game, we were like, what's this wide receiver breakdown going to be? Because there were some cycling through like injuries and missed COVID games between Gabe, Beasley, and Manny. And Gabe played basically every single wide receiver snap that wild card game, you know, and then he repeated the same thing. So they dictated that Gabriel Davis was the guy that they wanted. I think they dictated it in the offseason moves they've made. So, you know, the risk here, I guess, would be that we haven't seen, he doesn't have the production profile at the NFL level in terms of like playing a whole season as a starting wide receiver, earning, you know, really high targets per out run. So I do think there's some downside risk in overall targets, but like the more I look at it, I mean, he's going to play every snap. So I'm not even sure that's as much of a risk as people kind of think it is.
Yeah. Like you said, I mean, and the only guy that drafted was Shakir, and he's another slot guy. So like they really don't have anybody on the outside to play, like unless they want to move Crowder out there or do something really funky that is not going to be super comfortable. So yeah, I think that they're definitely all in here. And I noted the Chris Godwin comparison in my piece, mostly just to kind of talk about how like, cause I feel like when we bring up Gabe Davis, people are like, oh, like I couldn't even beat out Manny Sanders that last year. Like how good could he be? But like this happens, like this has already happened before with other good players. Like this is not like an anomaly that someone would go from, you know, losing work to a veteran to like getting kind of the work all by himself.
Yeah. So I'm into Gabe Davis, underdog ADP of 44.1. I also have on the screen the FFPC Football Guys Championship ADP. If you've listened to my podcast, I reference this as an ADP that for me is like kind of in between sharp and casual. So I feel like it's good representation. He's going as wide receiver 24 there, 51.8 overall. Both sites, the ETR projections have Gabe ahead of ADP. Even though it's more aggressive on underdog, the half PPR scoring kind of suits Gabe Davis's game, where like we're expecting big plays. We're expecting a really high touchdown rate. He's not going to gobble up targets, you know, like his counterpart there in Buffalo, Stephon Diggs. So he does get dinged a little bit in full PPR formats. The next guy you've got on your list, of course, I'm not logged in to your Substack. I believe Rashad Bateman is the next guy on your list. And Bateman is a prospect that we really liked heading into the NFL draft. You know, he was one of the analytics darling type prospects. And then he gets the draft capital of round one from the Baltimore Ravens, a team that we know is pretty analytically inclined. So it's kind of cool to see how that shook out. The rookie season for him was a mixed bag, Amico. He misses some time due to injury to start. He comes back. We sort of expected him to immediately supplant Sammy Watkins. That didn't really happen. When he was on the field, his numbers were fine. You know, they weren't really good or bad. They were kind of somewhat neutral. So why do you like Bateman so much?
Yeah, I mean, this is another spot, right? We just talked about this with Gabe, where he couldn't beat out Manny Sanders. You know, now we have Bateman, who like couldn't beat out Watkins for stretches. I mean, I do think that Bateman had like a strong finish down the stretch. Like he was playable a little bit in DFS. I mean, he was like underpriced, whatever. But like, I don't think that we've seen enough to say that like our priors basically on him were bad. And in fact, like there is a bunch of overlap between the rookie season comps, which are posted on the site, and the rookie profile comps that we had, you know, when Bateman was first drafted, a lot of the same like true X receiver type guys. And, you know, we had, or Adam, I should say, had Matt Harmon on his pod to talk about Bateman, and he noted a lot of those same characteristics as well. So I feel like Bateman, there's kind of this agreement going on between what the numbers are telling us and what the film is telling us, what the film guys are saying. I always love when that happens. We talked about that a lot when it comes to just the prospects. So to see that for a guy who has already played a season is also good. And obviously there's just a ton of targets that are going to be available. I mean, they trade Marquise Brown. They still have Andrews, of course, but like there really isn't a second receiver in town at all. I mean, I know Duvernay is kind of getting like the most buzz, guys like Prochet, but like who are those guys really? Like, are they really going to command targets in a way that's going to meaningfully impact Rashad Bateman? I would say probably not.
Yeah, the offseason was amazing for him, both in terms of the opportunity ahead of him and just what it says about how the team feels about him. When they ship away Marquise Brown, they don't really add anything at wide receiver, and they don't re-sign Sammy Watkins. It's pretty clear that, you know, the runway is open for Rashad Bateman to earn a really high target share. My slight concern with Bateman is two things. Is one, he wasn't like great from in terms of like targets per out and stuff when he was on the field last season. And also, I think this team's just going to throw a whole lot less than they did last season. You know, last year they had the injuries to the running backs, and then they weren't as strong as a team as we expected. And as a result, they threw last season 63% of the time, and their pass rate over expectation was pretty neutral. Two seasons ago, Amico, they threw 49% of the time. So like that was a huge discrepancy, and they had a negative 10% pass rate over expectation. The season before that, they called pass plays 47.5% of the time with a negative 7% pass rate over expectation. So my concern is Marquise Brown was really good, and they're going to throw the ball a lot less. So I do think some people that have the expectation of Bateman just stepping in and repeating Marquise Brown's year might be a little bit disappointed. So he's getting a little rich for me at like that 4-5 turn.
Yeah, I do agree that they're going to run the ball a lot more. I mean, they drafted two tight ends on day three of the draft. Like, I think that they are making like a pretty clear effort to try to get into those bigger sets. So I definitely think that that's the case. I just think that like he's good. I mean, not to say that that's not a concern, because it certainly is, but I think that it's going to be made up for just with like the raw target share that he could potentially command, you know, maybe not necessarily the base case, but like the upside case. You know, if you're a 30% target share guy, like if it's basically just him and Andrews, I still think that there's like a lot of room there for him to like hit a ceiling outcome.
Yeah. I think the big question mark is, you know, is he going to be, I think he needs to be like a 25% target share guy in this offense. And there's definitely the opportunity to do that. And we think he's good. But this is the only guy on your list that we have ranked below his ADP. So we have him as wide receiver 28 on FFPC season long. He's going as wide receiver 25. The next guy on your list is a guy you and I have been beating the drum on all offseason. It's Amon-Ra St. Brown, who just seems to have an absurd ADP right now. He's going as like wide receiver 30. I think he's our wide receiver 25 in PPR rankings. And it's a weird situation where I feel like in the past, Amico, that sometimes there was too much recency bias in fantasy sports analysis. And now that we're trying to be more thoughtful, sometimes it goes too far the other way where it gets too discounted. And this stretch run for Amon-Ra St. Brown last year, which when you layer in context, it's not totally cherry picking, because the second half of the rookie season on a team that had a new coach and a new quarterback we should put more weight into was just an absolutely spectacular run. I don't think people realize just quite how good it was for him.
Yeah, 51, 560, and 5 over the last six games. You know, if we extend that out just to like get some other players in, like 40 guys, the only guys who, as rookies, who have eclipsed 40 and 500, you know, I would say significantly less from week 11 on. So getting like two or three extra weeks in there. Justin Jefferson, Michael Thomas, OBJ, Anquan Boldin, Terry Glenn, and Amon-Ra. So I think it's really difficult to like just throw this off as being like, well, there's nobody else for them to get the ball to, which I think has been kind of like the talk around St. Brown. And I think that also he wasn't thought of as being like maybe a special prospect. He actually, kind of similar to Gabe, was like a day three-year prospect with a breakout. So similar profiles there that I think are being a little undervalued in the market. But like, I just think like if Rashad Bateman, who we just talked about, had that stretch that St. Brown did, like he would be going like in the third or fourth, like the third round, you know, like it would be wheels up. So I think that it's like, it's just such a clear discount.
Yeah. I think sometimes too, when we talk about upside at wide receiver, you know, we get hung up on maybe guys being like this prototypical old school, like big wide receiver one. And at the end of the day, guys, you know, who can catch 90, 100 balls a year, like that has some upside. And we saw Amon-Ra St. Brown even make plays as a rusher late in the season. So he has some yak ability, certainly. And again, looking at this stretch, I tweeted this out, but this were his target shares the last 6 weeks of the season: 29.3%, 30.8%, 42.3%, 31.4%, 29.7%, and 31.3%. His lowest target share for a single game was 29.3% over a 6 week stretch. So, I mean, in our base target shares at ETR, we've got him in the low 20s, and he still like kind of pops as a values. And we know there's upside beyond that, because he had a stretch where his lowest was 29%. And like, guys just don't do that anymore. And they certainly did add some competition at wide receiver for targets. I think it's one of those things that the combination of people discounting last year, giving us, you know, such a discount on his cost, and the offense being better, like it nets out that it's okay. So if he's a 23% target share guy, we're fine. You know, if the offense is more efficient because Jameson Williams comes back for the second half of the season, gives him a deep field threat, maybe DJ Chark gives him that at the beginning of the year, that's fine. You know, there's still room for DeAndre Swift to, you know, have a teens target share, and TJ Hockenson to be targeted around 20%, and Amon-Ra to get his. So yeah, I'm really high on Amon-Ra St. Brown, especially in full PPR leagues. Might be the best buy out there, quite frankly, right now. He's someone who definitely should be going at the 5-3 turn. I did pull up our FFPC rings. We have him as wide receiver 18 there, which might be a little bit rich, but I mean,
no, it's good. It's good.
It's good. Like, like he should be, I think he should be going in round 4. I think where the ADP is, I'm probably waiting to take him in 5 and seeing where some other names are coming off the board, but I'm heavily invested in him this season. And both him and Bateman too, Gabe Davis, like, obviously, if they're breakout wide receivers, they're really good for dynasty. But I was in some startup drafts where Amon-Ra slipped to like the 8th round, which just seemed they were super flex. It was, you know, super flex tight end premium. So that was part of the reason why he fell. But for a guy that's second year who had a rookie year like that, you know, really good dynasty buy, because if he repeats even close to what he did last year, the price is going to skyrocket in dynasty.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, I tweeted this out the other day when I was talking about like my fishbowl team this year, but it's like usually kind of like a hack, I think, if you're trying to build out like good redraft teams, is like if you try to draft it like you would a dynasty team, that is baking in like some of that upside, and you're going to get some of that ceiling that you want, I think, to win. You shouldn't exclusively do that, because then you exclude like some of the veteran guys that I think you need. But you know, just that idea of like, and I think Kareem talks about this a lot, where it's like, where could these guys be drafted next year? You know, that's, I think if you're doing it in that lens, then you know that these guys are buys.
Yeah, absolutely. I do. Like, at a certain point, the price becomes too rich on these guys if they're really hyped. I think Amon-Ra is nowhere near that point. I think, you know, Gabe Davis and Bateman could get there. Again, though, that's more of like a sharper league thing than a home league. I feel like in a home league, you can get all these guys at such a discount. But I do always think back to Brandon Ayuk last year, where it was like awesome breakout candidate in a vacuum. And then he, you know, 7th round, 6th round, 5th round, 4th round, there was a price at which it wasn't worth it. So I think Bateman's like flirting with that line. I think Gabe's still ahead of it, but there might be some bias there where I just think this ceiling there is just so outrageous that I'm kind of okay overpaying a little bit. And I think Amon-Ra is nowhere near it. And another guy on your list, your second breakout candidate that is really cheap right now, and I don't quite understand it, another guy that I've been buying low in Dynasty, is Chase Claypool.
Yeah. And I already have him in a couple leagues, so it's made it a little difficult to take advantage of the dip. But yeah, like I just think that
Claypool, are you pumping your bags here? Is this what you're pumping your bags? You're trying to sell them in Dynasty, so you're just gonna come on here and out chase Claypool?
No, I'm holding here. This is I'm holding him harder than I hold any coin, I'll tell you that. I think that, you know, Claypool obviously had a bunch of buzz coming into last year because he had the great rookie season. And I feel like the talk about Claypool has been almost exclusively negative. But when you look, like, he basically had the same year, like the, you know, almost the exact same number of yards. The only real difference is that he went from scoring 11 touchdowns to scoring 2, which is a humongous difference in terms of fantasy production. But like, there's so much variance that goes into the scoring those touchdowns, that it's like, you're not really sure how much to hold against him. He still has an elite profile, like the comps that pop off of last season, you know, we still see Michael Pittman, Calvin Johnson, DK Metcalf, AJ Brown, like elite guys. And that's coming off of a year that we maybe think is not so good. A part of that obviously is just because he's so big. There's not a lot of guys that are going to comp to him. But the other part is that he's still kind of producing in a way that's repeatable and in a way that can grow. And I think like the team level stuff all pretty much works in his favor. Like last year, he had all these like issues with Tomlin. You know, I think the year removed from that is always good for everyone. The quarterback upgrade, I think, is almost a guarantee. Like Ben Roethlisberger, even if he's like better, quote unquote, like than a Mitch Trubisky would be right now, I just think that like Trubisky likely, his play style is going to fit Claypool a lot better because he can get the ball down the field. Like Big Ben, like literally cannot throw the ball more than like 10 yards. So that's
I mean, it is nuts. You mentioned the touchdown variance because basically he goes from having this rookie year and he's stocked super high in Dynasty where he gets 109 targets, averages 8 yards per target. He comes back his sophomore year, doesn't improve upon that, but has 105 targets. So essentially the same in one less game and is at 8.2 yards per target. Yet his stock takes a huge dip because of some of the negativity around the Tomlin stuff and because he scores 2 touchdowns instead of 11 touchdowns. And I think I want to buy this type of player going into year 3. It's sort of like, you know, DJ Moore light, where DJ Moore is churning out these like 1100 yard seasons. And we kind of take for granted that like, oh, what if he has one season that's better and positive touchdown variance? I think we could see that with Claypool. We also, I mean, all these guys, there's some uncertainty to them. That's why they're priced at a point where the breakout is possible. And if you're buying guys whose, you know, past production lines up exactly where they're being drafted, you know, you're generally not going to find, you know, guys with huge room to profit. In fact, those are where, you know, you get the guys Ben Gretsch calls that could be small hits or big misses. And we want the opposite. We want, you know, possibly small misses, but potentially big hits. And the uncertainty with Claypool, of course, is the combination of Juju being gone, even though they did bring in George Pickens, and the quarterback switch, which, yeah, it's hard for the quarterback switch to be anything but at, like, break even or better, given how bad Ben was, particularly in the way Ben was bad. I think probably hurt Claypool, you know, more than it did some of the other guys.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just no ability to get the ball down the field. Like, I know Claypool's like, sounds like it's going to be like the power slot or whatever you want to say. And, you know, maybe
big slot, maybe.
Yeah, maybe that comes with a lower ADOT or whatever, but like, he's still going to make money down the field. And, you know, you need a guy that can get the ball there.
Big slot would just, I feel like we'd still have the big playability and then we'd get some freebies in there, which is what we want, some of the freebies. So he's going off as wide receiver 49, 108th overall on FFPC. We have him at wide receiver 44, about 1 to 2 rounds earlier than that, inside our top 100. So big fans of Chase Claypool. The final guy on your list, which, again, another guy we're united on, Kadarius Toney. And the uncertainty with Toney is twofold. One, he was a prospect that a lot of people, including us, like really didn't like. We thought he was severely overdrafted by the Giants. So he still has a little bit of that stigma. And then he also didn't play a ton last year. And again, that's uncertainty. People are a little bit scared off by that. But when he did play, he did things we didn't expect him to be capable of. He earned a really high targets per route run. So we're excited for him this year.
Yeah, I mean, I like you said, we were down on Toney as a prospect. But like right after that Dallas game where he had all those catches, like, I mean, we must have moved them like 100 spots in the Dynasty ranks. Like we bought all the way. And I don't think we've really backtracked much, if at all. Like, it's just really difficult to do, very similar to Amon-Ra. Like, it's just very difficult to do the things that he did as a rookie in the limited playing time that he did have. Now, again, like, the team level factors all work in his favor. Like, there's, hate to say no way with my Giants, but like, there's virtually no way that they're any nowhere near as toxically terrible as they were last year. Now that your boy Brian Daboll is there.
Right. I mean, you get the uncertainty in two ways, like mentioned it with Toney specifically, but then systemically, like, there's only one direction for them to go, as you said, with Daboll. You know, they're going to play at a faster pace. They're definitely going to throw more. And I mean, it looks like it looks good. You know, again, as far as like small miss, big hit, there's not a ton of, you know, Kenny Galladay's never been a huge target earner, even when he was really fantasy viable. He's been on teams that threw a lot and he's made big plays with Matthew Stafford, but, you know, Evan Ingram's gone. They have like nothing at tight end. Sterling Shepard is a target earner, but he's, you know, he could just have a completely washed season coming back from injury. They bring in Juan Dowell, who's super tiny. And like, I mean, I think it's just a really spectacular setup for Toney.
Yeah, he was 11th last year among all wide receivers in yards per route run, minimum 40 targets. So, like, which really surprised me, actually, when I saw that, because, like, I knew that he had played well, but I didn't realize, like, just how well he had played. Like, that's, like, borderline elite level as a rookie. And it becomes easy to see why the Giants are, like, trying to make sure this guy stays around. Like, Daboll's playing Tony's, like, music at practice and stuff. Like, yeah, dude, like, get him to stay, like, get him to want to be here, you know, and he seems excited. So I think that, like, you know, Tony's price probably started really low because it was being intimated, like, really strongly that he wouldn't be here. But now, like, I would say we should feel probably even more strongly the opposite way, that, like, he's going to play in New York this year. And I think that uncertainty kind of being gone makes him, like, a fifth or sixth round guy, like, at worst.
Yeah. I feel like, too, that wide receiver, maybe rounds 3 through 5, is maybe not quite as strong as last year. Or maybe it's just that it's a little bit flatter with some of these guys that we like, which, I don't know, kind of for me allows me to deviate early in the draft, especially like in a home league format where, like, we really know some of these guys will get at a pretty good ADP. You know, I can take an elite quarterback in 5-6, you know, knowing that I can get Gabriel Davis around there, knowing that Chase Claypool is like round 10, Kadarius Toney is like round 7-8. You know, Amon-Ra St. Brown could even drop to round 7. Like, hopefully you take him in 6, but I know you can only use one player per pick, and some of these guys do go in a close range, but it does let you deviate somewhat at the beginning of your draft. Even if you're a wide receiver heavy drafter, like, we're wide receiver heavy drafters, but I feel a little bit less pressure to kind of get, you know, 4 wide receivers in the first 5 rounds or something, knowing I could get, you know, 2 super early and then get a few of these breakout type guys. So, like, from a macro perspective, you know, are these players changing your draft strategy, or how does that play in?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of just like trying to get as many as I can in all these drafts. So, like you say, you can only take one guy per round. So there have been like a couple times where I'm drafting and, like, you know, I start wide receiver heavy and then I'm like, well, I'm not going to pass on Amon-Ra in 6. Like, I'm not going to pass on Tony in 8. And then it's like, oh shoot. Like, I have 7 receivers and a quarterback, and, like, that's my team right now. Like, so yeah, I think it definitely definitely opens you up to do some different things early. I know you're really into the elite quarterback stuff. I definitely am into that. But even just, like, you know, I think Jack noted that the receivers have been pushed up a little bit in the early stages and the running backs have been pushed down a little bit. Like, you know, I think that there is a little bit more room to get, like, a really good, like, hyper fragile build early, and then you still get, like, all these really good breakout candidates. You know,
even if it's not a quarterback, let's say 5-6 turn, you want to go Gabe Davis, Amon-Ra St. Brown. You know, that's, again, I think you're probably maximizing your team upside if you took a running back early that you can build around, like a hero running back, or hyper fragile, as you mentioned, where maybe you're taking 2 early, but you're just sticking with those 2 and kind of counting on them. In best ball, you're not drafting a whole ton of running backs. You can really load up at wide receiver, but that's generally how fantasy leagues are won, especially if you're full PPR, especially if you have 3 wide receiver slots plus a flex. Having 6 to 7 really high end wide receivers, giving yourself a chance to have 4 wide receivers that are just very clearly startable every week. That's how you're going to destroy your opponents in fantasy football. So, Amico, thank you so much for joining me to talk about your Substack article, the 5 breakout wide receivers, which you're pretty aligned on. Tell people where they can find you and your content.
Yeah, I mean, just follow me on Twitter at Amixta. You know, I'm doing the dynasty stuff for ETR. We're pumped. You know, as we get closer to the season, I think there's going to be a lot of changes made to the rankings. So definitely stay tuned for that. And yeah, on the Substack, we're going to have, you know, a bunch of different, I think, pieces throughout August to get you ready for more on the season-long fantasy side. So keep your eyes out for that.
Yeah, and of course, you can find all my stuff as part of the Establish the Run Draft Kit. Absolutely incredible value, especially if you're looking to grind some season-long props. We've already put out a bunch, expecting to put out a bunch more as the books put up more stuff over the off-season. If you are listening to this on the iTunes Podcast Network, please rate, review us. That helps a lot. If you're watching on the Establish the Run YouTube channel, subscribe, give us a thumbs up. It helps keep doing content like this for free. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. Best of luck this season.